Challenge Cyber Defense.
The cyber threat analyses you need to know about. Cyber Decryption. It's now.
Okay, let's unpack this. Today, we are diving deep into a specific corner of the cyber landscape, focusing on a group that's been getting some attention, Dynet V2.
Right.
And this deep dive is looking at analysis presented by the Cyber Intelligence Bureau. They're a division of the Orange Cyber Defense Epidemiology Laboratory.
Yeah, and what's really interesting about the Bureau's approach and what we're drawing on today is how they combine the usual OSINT, you know, open source intelligence, with something broader.
Broader how?
Well, they look at cyber activities not just technically. They use these other lenses, emotional analysis, cognitive analysis, intelligence, geopolitical factors. They're really trying to get at the complex influences behind these cyber threats.
Right, getting beyond just the code to, well, the human side, the politics shaping these actions.
Exactly, and it's really crucial. The Bureau stresses this. All the information comes strictly from open cyber sources.
Nothing classified.
No. It's all correlated, it's validated, and analyzed purely from that cyber perspective. They maintain strict neutrality on the politics itself. It's about reporting the activity, not taking sides.
Got it. So our mission today, then, is to use this analysis to really figure out Dynet V2. Who are they? Where do they come from? And what's their mission in the digital world based on what we can see?
Sounds good.
So let's jump right in. Where did they start? Their origins? How did they evolve? The report says their first public appearance was March 7th, 2025, on Telegram.
Yeah, and what's really striking, like, right away, is how reactive they seem to be. The analysis points to this big surge in activity just 2 days after that initial appearance.
2 days? Why?
It followed the arrest of an activist at Columbia University. So that immediate reaction kind of tells you their actions are tightly linked to specific real-world geopolitical stuff.
That fast response feels key then.
Yeah.
The report also talks about them calling themselves Dynet V2 later on. What's the V2? Was there a V1?
Well, the V2 definitely suggests an evolution, doesn't it? It implies an upgrade, maybe a significant expansion in what they can do, maybe more members compared to whatever came before.
Like a version 2.0?
Pretty much. Signals they see themselves as having leveled up.
Now, the source says their origin is kind of unclear, which isn't that unusual for these decentralized groups, right?
No, it's common. But their activity does give us some clues.
Like what?
Well, the Telegram channels they use, and more importantly, their alliances, they point towards a decentralized network, possibly international. The report specifically mentions links to pro-Palestinian hacktivist groups.
Okay.
And interestingly, some of those allies also show pro-Russian sympathies. Groups like Mr. Hamza and Lazograd Hack are named.
So that hints maybe a Middle Eastern or Eastern European influence.
It suggests that sphere, yeah. But the report is really careful here. It says there's no definitive proof tying Dynet V2 itself to one single country. It seems more about a shared ideology, a network.
And that network structure, is it top-down or more spread out?
Highly decentralized, especially to this V2 phase. The analysis suggests growing membership, and they keep their autonomy through these scattered Telegram channels.
Which makes them harder to take down.
Exactly. More resilient. One channel gets banned, others pop up or are already running.
So Telegram is really their home base.
It's where they communicate, coordinate, claim responsibility for attacks. And yeah, the report notes how persistent they are, quick to set up new channels when they get booted.
What about money? How does a group like this operate financially?
That's a good question. The report didn't find clear evidence of direct funding. It looks like they lean heavily on those alliances we talked about.
Sharing resources, maybe?
Could be resources, knowledge, yeah. But more significantly, it seems they rely on renting DDoS as a service tools.
Okay, rented DDoS tools. What does that actually mean for their capability?
Think of it like cloud computing, but for launching attacks. Instead of building and managing their own massive botnet, which takes serious skill, time, infrastructure, they just rent access to powerful attack networks when they need them.
Lowering the bar for entry.
Massively. The report mentions other groups like Overflame and Denbot's Proof using similar shared infrastructure, so it might be a common model or even a shared pool in certain hacktivist circles. For Dynet V2, it means they can launch big attacks quickly without needing deep technical expertise themselves.
Okay, that paints a pretty clear picture of who they are and how they operate. Let's shift to what they actually do, their methods, motivations, targets. The report says DDoS is their main thing.
Yeah, distributed denial of service is their go-to, and they use that rented infrastructure we just mentioned.
Any specific types of DDoS they favor?
The analysis lists a few vectors. TCP, RST, DNS amplification, TCP, SYM floods, NTP amplification too, and they seem to rotate through them.
Why rotate?
Keeps things unpredictable, makes it harder for defenders to anticipate and set up consistent blocks.
Could you maybe just quickly explain one or two of those? Like, what's the impact?
Sure. So a TCP SYN flood basically swamps a server. It sends tons of connection requests, but never finishes the connection, tying up the server's resources so legitimate users can't get through.
Okay.
And amplification attacks like DNS or NTP amplification, they bounce small requests off lots of vulnerable servers online, but they spoof the return address to be the targets. So all these servers send back much larger responses, flooding the victim with junk data. Weaponizing the internet itself, really.
Nasty stuff. Do they claim to do anything else besides DDoS?
They do. They claim things like website defacements, you know, changing the homepage and data breaches.
And are those claims solid?
Well, according to the source, not always. The report specifically points out that some claims, like one about stealing 247 gigabytes of data, seemed exaggerated or just couldn't be verified.
So maybe some bluffing involved?
Possibly. Or just amplifying smaller incidents. Their proven primary method remains DDoS.
Okay. What about their why, their motivations? The report calls them strongly geopolitical.
Absolutely. It's explicitly driven by pro-Palestinian and anti-Trump ideologies. They're actively opposing U.S. and Israeli policies.
To the point of threats?
Yes. The report notes they've issued direct threats against the U.S. government. And they frame their actions specifically as responses to military stuff, like citing U.S. airstrikes in Yemen as a trigger for their attacks.
And those alliances you mentioned, Lysograd, HACK, Silig Gang SG, do they reinforce these motives?
They really do. These partnerships kind of underscore that broader anti-Zionist and anti-Western theme that seems to be the core ideology driving Dynet V2.
So given all that, who are they hitting? Who are their main targets?
They deliberately focus on critical infrastructure. The report lists a whole range of sectors.
Like
finance, energy, transportation, telecoms, healthcare, government, even digital commerce, media platforms, software services, pretty much anything foundational.
That's a huge target list.
Yeah.
Does the report give specific examples in the U.S.?
Yeah, aiming for high impact or symbolic value. Things like the Port of Los Angeles, the Chicago Transit Authority, financial platforms like NASDAQ Q, even hitting social media like X for disruption.
And healthcare, too.
Yes. Healthcare providers are definitely targets. Epic Systems was mentioned. And hitting these sectors, you know, it's not just about the technical disruption. It really raises the question of how these digital attacks could spill over into real world consequences for everyday life, for essential services.
Yeah, that's worrying. Are they only focused on the U.S.?
No, the list of targeted countries is quite broad. It includes China, Russia, the U.K., India, Brazil, Saudi Arabia, France, Australia, South Korea.
Wow. Any pattern there?
Well, given their stated motivations, a lot of those targets seem to be countries perceived as allies of the U.S. or Israel.
Yeah.
Or maybe their targets chosen based on the goals of their own allies. It's a diverse list.
Okay, quite a reach.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about how they try to maximize the impact of what they do, beyond just the attack itself. The report talks about vectors of influence. What's that about?
This is where that broader analysis from the Bureau comes in, looking beyond the purely technical. Vectors of influence basically describes how the group strategically times and presents its actions.
To boost the message.
Exactly, to amplify the message and the psychological impact. It's not just about the attack, it's about the story they tell around it.
So what are these vectors?
Well, one key vector is strategic timing. We saw that with the activist arrest, right? Their activity spikes right after specific geopolitical events. That timing is calculated.
How so?
To grab maximum media attention. By linking their digital attacks directly to things already in the news, things people are already emotional about, they amplify their political message.
And targeting critical infrastructure fits into this.
Definitely. That's another vector. Symbolic targeting of critical infrastructure. Hitting energy, healthcare, finance. Yes, it causes disruption, but it's also a powerful symbol.
A symbol of what?
Of their capability, their reach. It's designed to expose vulnerabilities, sow a bit of fear, and show they can touch things people depend on.
Makes sense. What else?
Building a narrative is huge. They constantly align their actions with these strong ideological causes. Pro-Palestinian, anti-U.S. administration. This isn't just for themselves.
It's to rally support.
Right. It helps them get support from other like-minded groups online, individuals too. It makes them seem part of a bigger, more legitimate movement.
The report also mentioned they work on a rebel hacker myth.
Yeah, that's part of building the narrative. they paint themselves as these digital rebels fighting the system for a cause. It's a modern kind of activism image.
And that helps recruit people.
Exactly. That myth is cultivated online to, well, essentially indoctrinate and mobilize potential new recruits who are drawn to that image of defiance.
Okay, and the last vector mentioned was media staging.
This ties it all together, really. Every big operation gets publicized. They put out statements. Here's who we hit. Here's why. Here's how successful we were.
Why are we so public?
It's intentional. This media staging is meant to intimidate their adversaries. Yeah, but also to bolster their own image as serious militant activists. It makes sure their actions have a political echo way beyond the technical glitch.
This focus on influence and narrative brings us to maybe the most interesting part of the Bureau's analysis, the psychological side. How does Dynet V2 actually use emotional and cognitive manipulation?
Yeah, this is where the analysis gets really deep. The report looks at how their actions, maybe implicitly, use principles from psychological frameworks. Like, they probably aren't reading academic papers on the SWTCH framework.
Which looks at influencing behavior.
Right, through things like social influence, incentives, triggers, context, habits. But their tactics reflect these principles. They're not just attacking servers. They're trying to shape how people think and feel.
Can you give some examples from the report?
Sure. Let's take social influence. Partnering with groups like Sillithang SG isn't just about sharing attack tools. It boosts their legitimacy, expands their reach.
Makes them look bigger.
Exactly. Amplifying shared narratives, coordinating attacks, it makes the whole movement seem larger, more coordinated. That's social proof, and it attracts more followers.
Okay. What about incentives? What motivates them if, say, a DDoS attack is quickly mitigated?
Good point. The report suggests symbolic victories and media attention are the main incentives here. Getting headlines, getting talked about on social media, that's the reward, even if the actual disruption was temporary.
So visibility is the prize.
It seems to be a major driver.
Yeah.
It keeps current members engaged and draws in new people attracted by that perceived impact and effectiveness.
And triggers that links back to the geopolitical events again.
Absolutely. Those events, the arrests, the military strikes, they act as powerful triggers. Dynet uses them to launch rapid responses. By doing that, they capitalize on the emotions and media attention already swirling around those events.
Hijacking the news cycle, almost.
In a way, yeah. It massively amplifies the psychological punch of their own actions.
The report also mentioned techniques similar to NLP, neuro-linguistic programming.
Right, NLP-style techniques. NLP often focuses on using specific language patterns to influence perception, sometimes subconsciously.
And Dynet does this how?
Through their messaging. They use very emotionally charged language, strategic framing, like labeling opponents Zionist allies. This kind of language is designed to sway followers, stir up strong emotions against enemies, and just reinforce the narrative they want to push.
Okay, and what about cognitive manipulation? How does that fit in?
Their planning isn't just technical. It seems to follow a logic aimed at messing with people's thinking. They plan attacks, thinking about the psychological impact on the targets, governments, defenders, the public.
How?
By exploiting how we process information. In today's world, with so much noise, they can try to sow doubt, confusion, fear. Maybe by creating information overload around an event or making people question if critical systems are really secure, if they impact your perception, your trust in institutions, that's a win for them.
That's quite a sophisticated layer to their operations, not just taking down websites, but playing mind games.
It adds a whole different dimension.
Okay, so based on all this really detailed analysis, what does the Bureau think might happen next? What are the hypotheses for Dynet V2's future?
Well, the report outlines two main possibilities. There's a most likely hypothesis, and then a more worrying, feared scenario.
Let's start with most likely. What does that involve?
The most likely path suggests they'll continue their strategic targeting. Keep hitting critical infrastructure, energy, health, finance. The goal stays the same. Expose weaknesses, cause disruption, try to mobilize public opinion against Western governments, and generally erode public trust.
So more of the same, but maybe more intense.
Pretty much, yeah. And an evolution in methods. The most likely view also includes hybrid attack methods.
Hybrid, meaning?
Moving beyond just DDoS. Potentially combining DDoS with other things, like maybe ransomware attempts or using data stealers. The report also expects them to ramp up efforts on data breaches and website defacements, more ammo for their media staging and narrative building.
And the potential impact they're aiming for.
They seem to be aiming for systemic impacts. Future attacks might try to go beyond just temporary glitches, maybe aiming for longer outages, maybe even physical consequences if they could disrupt systems controlling physical processes. The goal seems to be broader societal disruption, shaking public confidence.
Okay, that's the likely path.
Yeah.
What about the most dangerous hypothesis? Or the feared scenario. That sounds ominous.
It is. This is the escalation scenario. The feared possibility is a large-scale coordinated cyber attack using multiple vectors aimed squarely at critical infrastructure in the U.S. or allied nations.
Coordinated meaning?
Yeah.
Involving their allies.
Exactly. Leveraging those partnerships with other hacktivist groups to make the attack much bigger, much more impactful. And crucially, this scenario imagines the attack being timed to coincide with major geopolitical events.
And maximize the chaos.
Yes. Maximum chaos, maximum media attention, hitting when the world is already on edge or looking elsewhere.
What kind of targets are we talking about in that nightmare scenario?
The report highlights the big ones. Energy grids, transportation networks, financial systems, healthcare providers. Systems where failure causes immediate, widespread societal and economic pain, aiming for maximum instability.
And how could they pull off something that big?
The methodology would likely be a combination platter. Massive DDoS, yes, probably using those rented services and botnets, but also combined with data breaches and potentially coordinated misinformation campaigns running alongside the technical attack, exploiting any vulnerability they can find, including in third-party suppliers, which makes it really hard to spot, attribute, and stop.
The consequences sound severe.
Extremely. The report talks about possibilities like prolonged power outages, major financial losses, emergency services being disrupted. Worst case, if hospitals or other critical life support systems are hit hard, it could endanger lives.
And a successful attack like that would send ripples everywhere.
Absolutely. It would embolden other groups, potentially leading to a significant escalation in the overall threat landscape. The report does briefly mention countermeasures, things like closely monitoring their Telegram channels, making sure employees have counter narratives, anticipating this kind of escalation, and just constantly working to harden critical infrastructure defenses.
Okay, so bring this deep dive toward a close. We've really unpacked Denet V2. We've seen how they emerged as this decentralized, very reactive hacktivist group.
Yeah, fueled by clear geopolitical motives.
Primarily using those powerful rented DDoS tools, but also claiming more. And crucially, strategically, using psychological tactics, building narratives, staging media moments.
Right, to amplify their influence way beyond just the technical damage they might cause. Understanding their origins, their evolving methods as motivations, and especially that strategic use of psychological vectors, it's just critical in today's environment.
And that's really why this deep dive matters to you, listening right now. Their focus on critical infrastructure, that potential shift towards hybrid attacks, and the possibility, even if it's the feared scenario, of attacks causing real-world systemic disruption, it means their activities have real implications for our digital society, our economy, maybe even our safety.
And maybe the biggest thing to take away from this analysis is how modern cyber conflict isn't just tech versus tech anymore. It's increasingly fought on multiple fronts at once. The digital space, yes, but also the media landscape. And maybe most importantly, inside the perceptions and minds of the public and leaders. Which leaves us with a tough question, doesn't it? How do you really defend yourself when the target isn't just your network, but also the narrative itself?
The cyber threat analyses you need to know about. Cyber decryption. We'll be talking about it on this channel very soon.
Orange Cyber Defense.